Welcome to the final walkthrough, for problem set 8. So you've gotten to your last CS50 problem set. Congratulations. First, a note on the problem set. So many of you might have decided to drop it, in which case you probably wouldn't be watching this video, but if you're still on the fence about dropping it, you may have heard horror stories about problem set 8. You may have heard them from me or other people who have taken the class in the past, specifically last year, but the problem set has been changed completely. So the problem set is a million times easier than it was last year. You have distribution code, which you did not have last year. So you have so many of the functions that we struggled to write last year already written for you. So that's sort of the first thing to put out of your minds. You're not going to spend as much time as people spent on it last year. You're not going to have as much trouble. The TFs this year know this problem set well, so they'll be able to help you more during office hours. So in general, this portion of the course has been improved, and it has been made much easier for you. So don't drop this problem set if you are even watching this video. It would be a shame to have come this far in the course and to not complete the last problem set, which is actually really cool. So let's look at what this problem set actually requires you to do and what the final result is. And you'll see that it can be useful. So this is what the staff solution looks like. It's a mashup. So you're using Google Maps API in order to, which is code that they give you, functions that they give you from their own software that lets you use these functions to create your own additions onto their products. So obviously Google Maps. There's also Google News. And so what we're doing is using Google Maps API in order to merge Google News into the site. So this is the finished product. You can go to any zip code. So someone give me a zip code. 29016. Okay, so there's only one city there. Let's see what it is. All right, so we're in South Carolina. And these are the top 10 news articles for that city. And this is what you are going to implement. If we went somewhere with, let's go back to 02138, and let's zoom out. Well, we don't have to zoom out. We can deal with these cities. So you see this is Harvard. We have Cambridge. This is CS50's sort of home page that you can click on here. And what you're going to have is, and then all the other cities like Somerville here have the news articles. So you're going to make it so that you can, oh, and actually my Safari's in Russian because I'm studying Russian. So my controls are in Russian, which is kind of funny, but yours won't be. What you want to do is make it so that you can go to any place on the map. You can go to any region, and as soon as you move the map, it should recall this function, that's update, that we'll get to, and place, that's why there's a bit of a delay, and it'll place these markers on about 5 or so cities, and here we also have the CS50's sort of home page or home marker, that's why there's more markers here, and for each marker that you're going to be able to click it and see the news results for that area. Okay, so this is a really cool thing that can be applicable to other things. So, for example, I work for a student theater company and have changed my mashup from last year in order to include our sponsors on it. And so, there are markers on each sponsor, and you can click the sponsor, and there's an image of their venue, stuff like that. So, this is really cool. You saw at the beginning of the class, David had a mashup of had a Google map with all of your hometowns on it. So things like that are really cool. It's a really cool way to do things like that and to learn how to use APIs in general, because a lot of different companies offer APIs for you to use their code. So it's a good practice for that and for the final project and stuff like that. So enough about how great this problem set is. Let me help you do it. This is our agenda. You're going to have to write an import function, which is going to import this CSV, so comma-separated values file, of every city in the U.S., its population, its latitude, longitude, et cetera, a bunch of values. You're going to import that into an SQL database so that you can search it, so that you can find the 5 greatest cities. And you're not actually doing this because this code is already written for you, the finding the 5 biggest cities for each region, but you will have to make this database so that that function can can query that database. So this is using SQL again. Then controls is just adding controls to your map, so letting you zoom into the map, for example. So we'll go over how to do that, and that's really simple. Then search is enabling that search bar that you saw. So if you want to be able to move your user to any city that they request, they need to be able to type into that search bar and hit go, and then they need to be whisked away to that place on the map. So you have a map already because of the distribution code, but the search bar doesn't work. So if they hit search, it won't go anywhere. So you need to make it go somewhere. And then the news part of it, of course. So you already have the five greatest cities, and we're going to show you how to get the news from those. And you already have a function that's given to you, again, that gets you the news for that city. And then all you have to do is parse the XML that comes from that function that gets you all the news. And you want to put those news links into a marker, so into an info bubble that comes up when you click on a marker. So those are sort of the four parts of this problem. And there's a mini part, I guess, that you can change your progress bar. So we're not really going to go into this because you saw it down in the lecture and it's explained in the problem set. So just change your progress bar to be something that's fun for you. And a side note, first of all, I have lollipops for those of you who came, so you can take those. And then I have, these are from Endica. These are little rockets. Endica is a company that Mike Tucker, one of the teaching fellows, works for. So if this is something you're really into, if you might consider an internship or a job with this kind of stuff, they deal specifically with search engines. So you can talk to Mike Tucker about this. And I am going to give these rockets to people who answer questions. So do answer questions. Okay, so let's get started. So import is, if we look inside of our terminal, let me make this bigger. Import, you see right here, is not .php. Right, and that's because we're going to be running it actually inside of the shell. So if you open it, there's nothing in there, so I won't open it even right now. But know that it's not import.php, it's just import. And that's because you're just going to run it you're just going to run it one time on the shell, and it's going to import all the values into the database. So at the top of the file, in order to make this possible, at the top of the file you need to write this line of code before you write anything else. So first you write this line. Okay, so sharp and then bang, that's called shebang, /user/bin/php. And that makes it accessible from the shell. The next line will be the open PHP tag, so the left angle bracket ?PHP. Then you're going to write PHP code, and part of that PHP code is going to be requiring the file constants.php. And constants.php is the same thing we had in pset 7, where we had a file in which you had your database name, database password, et cetera, so that you can connect to the database. So you're going to have to require those constants again using require once, that function we remember from pset 7. And then another thing you have to do before you actually run import is to go to phpMyAdmin and make a table there. So make the database that you're going to need to store all these zip codes in and stuff like that. Okay, so actually go on, log in, and manually create this database, create this table. And then inside of your code, you're going to use MySQL Connect to connect to your MySQL user. And then you're going to use MySQL Select Database to select the database that you just created. So this is all remarkably similar to pset 7. So just copy and paste the code right out of there for most of this. And don't forget to update constants with your data, with your username, your password, and your database name. Okay, so what we are going to put in via import into our database is right now given to us as a CSV file. CSV means comma separated values. So Excel, for example, can read comma separated values. So if you put this into Excel, if you open this file in Excel, it'll put everything that's before a comma into one cell. So it'll be one cell has some writing, and then instead of the comma, that means move to the next cell in Excel, if you understand that. So the same way, we're going to try to get it to move to the next sort of slot in the database, as we're about to see. But know that these are comma-separated values. And the way that you open this file that you're given, this file, by the way, was purchased for really expensive by the course. So you can't get this kind of data for free about every city in the United States, its population, latitude, longitude. So You're going to open that file, and this is the same way we open things in PSET 5 and PSET 6. So there's a function fopen in PHP, just like in C, and you can create a variable to store that file pointer. And again, it can be called FP, it just needs to have the dollar sign in front of it because it is PHP. So the first thing you want to do is skip the first row of the file because this has information that we don't need. It's not actual values. So the way to do that is just the same way we had fgetc in PSET 5, I believe, and PSET 6. Now we're going to use fgetcsv to tell fget, tell all these file IO commands that we're dealing with comma-separated values. So you do fgetcsv of fp, and that'll get you the entire first row, and since you're not going to store it anywhere, it'll move on. So it's as if it's a cursor moving, it'll move past that first row. So every time you call fgetcsv, it'll get an entire row. And each row in this CSV file is going to contain the information that we want about a city. So it'll have the city, the state, the population, the latitude, the longitude, and a bunch of stuff we also don't need. And this is all gone through in the spec, so make sure you, as always, read the spec. So now you're going to have a while loop that's going to go through this data and store it inside variables. And so this while loop is going to go through the rows, and the rows represent how many cities that we have. So you're going to go through, it's a while loop, and the way you're going to get one row is by having this variable, let's say data. So data equals fgetcsv of fp. So this is the same sort of while loop that we had in PSET 7, where you were using MySQL fetch array in a variable called row, and you did while that was being assigned. So it's the same idea of while you have something to fill this data variable, and it's not false. So once you inside that while loop, you'll be able to refer to pieces of that data as data 0, data 1, data 2, so as if you're in an array, which you are. So each row here gets stored in this array called data, or you can call it row if you like, or you can even call it city. Call it whatever makes most sense to you. But for example, data 0 is the zip code. Data 1 is whether this is a primary entry, and you only want to deal with primary entries. So while you don't necessarily want to store data 1 somewhere, you want to check that it's a primary entry. And the problem set spec goes through how to do this. And so does the documentation on this CSV file that we have. So then data 2 is the population of that city. And then I don't know what numbers, but data something is the latitude. Data something is the longitude. So you want to store all these fields that you're going to need later, such as the zip code, the population, the latitude, the longitude, in variables. And then insert those variables into the table you just made with the insert call. Okay, so remember how you inserted things into your database in PSET 7? So now you're going to also have a line of code that's insert. And again, it's the same thing with MySQL command. So you first prepare your SQL query, and that SQL query is going to have insert, and it's going to have the values, the sort of categories of your table that you're inserting into, and then all these variables that you just stored. So this is all taking place in the same while loop, because you want to do this for each row of the CSV file. In other words, for each city. So inside this while loop, you're basically going through each city, and for each city, you're storing into variables its latitude, its longitude, its population, and then inserting that stuff into the database on MySQL. Okay, and then so of course you prepare the query, and then you actually execute MySQL query on that query. And then at the end, you just close the file. Any questions on inserting so you should try this maybe with a smaller comma-separated values file. So to create a comma-separated values file, just enter the zip code, comma, population, comma, et cetera, and see if it works for two or three rows, because this data set is immense. So it'll take a really long time. So if you're importing it unsuccessfully many times, you'll have to delete it many times, and it'll just be a pain for you. But once you've imported, now you have all this information about all these cities inside your SQL database, and these functions that CS50 wrote for you can now query the database for the five largest cities in each sort of view of the map. So every time you move the map, it's going to call this function update. Update's going to call other functions, and it's eventually going to find out which are the five largest cities and put markers on them. Okay, so that's the purpose of importing all this information about cities. Okay, the next part of the problem set is you have to add controls to your map. So this isn't difficult at all. It's inside your load function. It'll literally require two lines of code for two controls. And you should go to these two websites in order to browse the API. So the first link is a link to an introduction to the Google Maps API. And this, I'm sure you'll be back on this page many times while you're doing this problem set. And it goes over every single function that's available to you now that you are using their API. So that's always useful. And the second one is specifically about controls. So what controls are available and what each one does. So controls are things like being able to zoom into the map. And map.addControl right there, that's specifically the function that you're going to use to add a control to your map. And inside those parentheses, you're going to write which control you want to add. Okay, so go to those two links to find out how to do that. So that's all for controls. It's really very simple, and it'll just make your map look cooler and more functional. Okay, so now next is the search bar. So this is the first sort of big change you're going to make to your map that's going to help people use it. And it's what's going to allow the user to type in an address or a zip code. So they can type in a zip code, but they can also type in an address into the search field, hit go, and be transported to where that address is on the map. So the way that we enable the user to submit addresses also is by using this thing called a geocoder that Google gives us, which will convert an address, so a human-readable address, no matter how specific or unspecific it is, into a latitude and a longitude, so into a point. So this is really important because without this, we could only expect the user to type in the actual latitude and longitude, which would be really difficult to expect the user to do because who knows their latitude and longitude. So this part is already done for you, this code that's written here, so no need to write down. This is in index.html, which has been written for you, and this is a form, right? So that we saw this in PSET 7, and it's using get. That means it's going to be submitting via the URL, right? And you see that action is blank, right? So action is blank. Why? Why is action blank on this form? That means when you click go on the form, it doesn't do anything. Is that what it means? If there's no action?
Submits to itself.
Sort of, right. So the answer was it submits to itself. And you could have one of these ready. Ooh, that's pretty good. Okay. So it doesn't actually go to another page is what this means. So that's right. It sort of submits to itself in that you're staying on the same page. So you're not going to move to another page because we don't want to. This is a way of using what we call Ajax. So Ajax is not a language in itself. It's just a specific way of using JavaScript that enables you to do this kind of stuff, like refresh a part of the page without sending the user to a new page or without reloading the whole page. So this is, for example, what Facebook does. When you write on someone's wall, you don't have to refresh the page in order to see your comment. There's just a little progress bar or something, and then the comment gets posted. So this is all via Ajax calls, which are becoming more and more popular, and you'll see more and more websites. You don't actually have to go to a new page or reload the page to see some change that you made to it, and especially for interactive websites that allow user input. So this is a very cool thing also to become familiar with. So you see method equals get, meaning that it is the sort of URL idea, and on submit, you go to the function go. So I made that red because this is really important because this tells us where to write whatever we're going to write, that the code that we're going to write that's going to enable this search. So it's going to be in the function go, which lies in mashup.js. So inside the go function is where we're going to take whatever the user just typed in this search and actually use that. Okay. And then the other thing I turned red here, which is the other important part, is Q. So Q is the ID that we're going to, is the ID name that we're going to refer to whatever the user just typed in as. So we're going to need to get this information in order to get the address, as we're about to see in the next slide. So let me move on to this. And this is inside your Go function. So we're going to look at the example geocoding from the API. And you're going to see they use this word address to refer to the address the user typed in, but we're using Q. But our Q is different than their address, and we're about to see
how that is by looking at the geocoding example. So now this geocoding example you can access and you should access to look more at it. And this is when you go onto the documentation for this API and you look at the geocoding example and you click view example, it'll take you to the page where it allows you to type your address, hit go, and it takes you to that address and it puts a marker there. So if you hit view page source on that site, you'll get this. And that's exactly what I did, and there's a link to this in the problem set spec. So once you view the page source, you see what exactly they're doing to enable this. And there's a few differences, but it's largely the same thing you have to do inside of Go. So let's look at the differences. So this is their form right here. So I just showed you our form. This is their form. So their form is slightly different, right? On submit, we just call the Go function with no arguments. They're calling show address with this argument, so the address value, which is what enables them to use address up here inside their show address function. Our Go, the way it is implemented now, you know, because CS50 implemented it for you, doesn't have that. So you're not passing Go with the address in it. You're just getting Go. So that's why we have the element, we have the ID part of it. ID equals Q. So what we want to do is get the element by its ID. And this kind of stuff, when I say get element by ID, for example, these are JavaScript functions that you've seen in lecture. So do go back to the lecture slides and to Ajax and JavaScript lectures in week 9 and see. But that's why we have here the way that we get Q from that search bar is by calling document.getElementById Q.value. Okay, so wherever they say address, we want to say document.getElementById Q. Because we're not passing Q or whatever the user just typed in, we're not passing that to our Go function. So our Go function has to go get it itself via this JavaScript function. Okay, so that's a difference. But the rest is largely the same, so let's go back to it. So that was their form. You're not going to change our form. There's no need to, so just use the form that's already there. And then this is their equivalent of a Go function, this part right here. So you want to check if geocoder, so to enable the geocoder, and geocoder is a function that Google is giving us, in order to be able to convert an address into a latitude and a longitude. So it's geocoder.getLatLong, so get latitude, longitude, and then in their case it's of the address, but in our case it's going to be of the get element by ID, right? And then it calls the function point, on point. So the name of the function isn't point, the name of the function isn't function, so what's the name of the function? It's a trick question. There is no name to this function. So this is a lambda function. And if you're interested in lambda functions, CS51 goes in depth into lambda functions. They're functions with no names because there's no real reason to give a name to this function because this function is only going to be used in this context. So you could write it below and only call it here, but there's a sort of niftier way of doing it by just calling it right when you need it and defining it right there as well. So you have this function that takes one argument, which is the point, which is what geocoder.getLatLong is going to return to you. So you can just write it just as they have, because point is the result of calling geocoder.getLatLong. And the point is going to be the latitude and longitude of the, it's going to be the latitude and longitude of the address that the user typed in. Okay? So if not point, so if that's not an address, you can say address not found. And the way they're doing it is by actually putting the address into the alert, so whatever the user typed in, and then not found by concatenating. In JavaScript, concatenation is with a plus sign. In PHP, it's with a period. So they're concatenating the variable address with the string not found or space not found. But what you can just write, that address wasn't found, as a string. And I think that's all right. So if they don't find it, then just do that. Else, set the center of the map, so map.setCenter, on that point with a zoom of 13. And this, the rest of the stuff you don't have to do because you don't have to put a marker on the address that they typed in. So your goal isn't to put a marker on their address. Your goal is only to take them to that region, and then the update function,
is called inside of Go, and will find the five greatest cities, five biggest cities in that region, and put markers on them. So you don't have to put markers. So ignore these lines. You just have to center the map on that point, and then call the update function. Okay, and calling the update function is also already done for you. These lines, you don't need to worry about, because these lines deal with putting a marker onto the map, and you don't need to put a marker on the map. Is that clear? Good. Okay. So that's the Go function. So you see here, I basically rewrote the same thing. So it's going to be a lambda function. So it's going to result in the call to this lambda function that takes point, which is returned by the geocoder. And if not point, alert the user. And an alert in JavaScript is that pop-up window that says whatever text you put in, and then the user clicks OK to get rid of that pop-up. And then else, map set center on the point at zoom, it could be 13, 14, whatever you want. Okay, so now we get to the heart of this problem set and the most challenging part, which is actually dealing with this proxy.php file that's going to query the database for the five largest cities, that's going to put markers on those cities, and that's going to send you the news for each of those cities. So this is a huge amount of stuff that proxy.php is doing, but we have to be able to tell it what cities we need or what region of the map we're on. We need to ask for this result, for these results back, and we need to get those results and deal with them. So that's sort of a three-part process. So let's do the first part, which is actually sending information to proxy.php and asking it for the cities and for the news that we need. So the first thing we need to know about this is that proxy needs to take the southwest bound and the northeast bound of where you are on the map right now. So the way that you get this is by using these functions. So you already have a variable called bounds that's already written for you that's going to store the bounds of where you are right now, but they don't give you each specific bound. So you need the southwest and the northeast. So you're going to create these variables, southwest and northeast, that are bounds, which is the variable that's already created, dot get southwest, and bounds dot get northeast. And those functions will give you the southwest and the northeast. And you need to know this because you need to send this to, in this AJAX call, to proxy.php. Okay? So this is in the update function. All of this is going to take place in the update function, because the update function is what gets called every time the map is moved and every time the user hits go on the search bar and goes to a new location. Okay, so inside update, you prepare a request to proxy.php. So you should look at the AJAX examples from lecture, and we're actually about to look at one right now. So I'm looking at AJAX 5 right here, and it creates a JavaScript request and tells you, and you can do it in exactly this way. So again, looking at all this source code, both from the Google Maps API and from the lecture slides and from the lecture source code, it will be very helpful to you because you can use a lot of this stuff exactly the same. So if you remember this from lecture, and if you don't, you should go back, like I said. This is from when he was trying to get the quote of a stock using AJAX, so without going to a new page. And the first thing you do is create an HTTP request. Okay, so the way you try to do that is, well, it's going to be different if the person is using Microsoft, so that's why you have to try to just create a new XML HTTP request and store it in this variable, XHR, which previously was set to null. So you have this sort of HTTP request variable. It's originally null because you haven't made a request. Then you try to make the request, and if that doesn't work, then you have to do it this way. So just don't worry about why this is necessarily. Just know that it's a special thing for Microsoft. So you have to do it this way if their browser is different. And then you also have to handle old browsers that don't support AJAX. So most browsers support AJAX, but just in case. So then if it's still null after you tried both ways, then you want to alert the user that their browser does not support AJAX. And before You can ask, before you send the request, you have to have a request that you're sending, right? So you have to tell the other file what you're looking for. So in this case, I'm submitting to quote3.php, which obviously is different in our case. So we're submitting to proxy.php, and then use this question mark, which is a convention, and then what fields you're sending it. So in this case, it was symbol, and then you see again this get element by ID symbol and the value of that. And that's what the URL was. That's what you were sending to the HTTP request. That's what you're sending to the other file. So in this case, this is what you sent to quote3.php. In our case, it's going to be different. I'm about to show you. So in our case, this is part of our URL. So I couldn't give you the entire URL, but I gave you 80% of it. So it'll be really easy to fill in the rest. But our URL is going to submit to proxy.php. Then you have the question mark. And then the fields that you're sending are the Southwest, and then equals. And then this is where you concatenate in JavaScript concatenation, like I said, is a plus sign. This is where you concatenate the Southwest latitude. So Southwest is the variable we just created, and it turns out that you can call the latitude function on it by doing southwest.latitude, and it's going to find the latitude there and put it in there, and then again the quote, and then so that you can put a comma in the URL, and then the Southwest longitude, again the concatenation, because this is a variable, and then you put in so that's for what the Southwest is, but you also want to send what the Northeast is. So the Southwest is going to be the Southwest latitude, comma, the Southwest longitude, and you want to do the same thing for Northeast. So that's the only part I left out. So in here, you just fill in the same thing that was done for Southwest, but for Northeast. And you put that inside the URL. And then to send the request, you type this line of code. But the reason it says request.open isn't because this function is specifically to open a thing called request. As we've seen, like with southwest.lat, you can call these functions on variables you've already created. So this request right here is the equivalent of, in David's source code, the XHR variable. So I just called that in my own version. I called it request because I thought it made more sense to me and it was easier for me to follow. So you can do request.open to open that request. Okay, and then it's via get, right, because it's actually going to change the URL when you call this, and then you actually put the URL variable there. Okay, so that's part one, that's sending to the proxy. Now the proxy is going to return news to you. So the news that the proxy is going to return is going to be from Google News. So if you actually go to googlenews.com, with this link right here, you'll see 10 news articles about Cambridge, so about 021-8. And that looks like, I think I have it open here. Yeah, so that looks like this. So this isn't your typical, because it's the output type is RSS, so this isn't what you see if you go to Google News and search for 021-8. This is the RSS feed, so that it's more computer readable. And what you're going to do is be able to parse this this XML, right, that's produced by the RSS feed. And the way you're going to do that is after this call to proxy.php, which we just initiated, right, we just made that call when we sent over that URL, that's going to return JSON, which is JavaScript Object Notation, which is very similar to XML. And what that's going to have inside of it is cities, which is an array of the five biggest cities in that region that you are. So between your southwest and your northeast bounds, it's going to have the five largest cities. And then inside each of those cities, it's going to have information about the city and the state. I don't know what else, and the article titles and stuff like that. But each of the articles is itself part of an array. So inside each city, you're going to have an array of 10 news articles from Google News about that city. Okay. So let's take a look at what JSON actually looks like. Right here. Is that readable to you guys? Yeah. Okay, so this is what you're going to have returned to you.
by this function. So, does that bigger? It's not, I mean, the problem set tells you to go to this page yourself, so you'll see this yourself. So if you can't see it on this screen, that's fine. But just know that you're going to, that this JSON is going to have sort of tags, right? These are kind of like tags where you have zip code, colon, and then the zip code. City, colon, and then the city. State, colon, Massachusetts. Latitude, longitude, and then here's that array of articles I was telling you about. So these are all, this is, and each article has a link and a title. Right? So each city has a zip code, city, state, latitude, longitude, and articles, but each article also has a link to it and its title. And here you see that we have this for 5 different cities. And this is what you are going to want to manipulate. So let's see how we actually manipulate that. So to get this response, so to get that text that I just showed you, you want to run this line of code. So var cities, where cities is a variable that's going to have all this information about these 5 cities in it. And then eval, which is short for evaluate, it's a JavaScript function. And then this string right here. So the string is, as you see, it's a concatenation of the variable request.responseText. Okay, and again, that's request because I named my request variable request. But you can name your request variable XHR or whatever it is, but in that case, it would be XHR.responseText. Okay, and that'll give you that JSON that we just looked at that has these fields. And it's going, because it's going to evaluate that string as JavaScript, okay, and store it inside of the variable cities. Okay, and this is also done in David's lecture notes and source code. So look through the source code for another example of that. But then the way that you're going to actually access these sort of aspects of a city or parts of the article, like the title and the link, is by having a nested for loop, or it won't be nested right away, right? So first, you're going to go to for var I equals 0, I less than cities.length. So again, you can run functions like length on variables that you just created. So I just created cities, but I could ask for the length of this array cities. Okay, and then this is your typical for loop like in C. And then for each city, you might want to access different things about it. So this is sort of up to you, right? So inside of your, this part of the problem set is generating what's actually going to appear in the info bubble once you click on a marker. So this is what's going to appear inside of that marker. And you can choose to have whatever you want inside there. You have to have the news articles. You have to have 10 articles, but you can also have, for example, the city and the state and its zip code. In which case, before you started this for loop that iterates through the articles, you would want to have something that iterated, that gave you, let's say, the city's zip code and the city's name. So you're going to look through the JSON to see what those elements are called, but I've already done that for you for the articles. So if you go inside this for loop that iterates through the articles, you see cities. So this is going, you see I is iterating through the cities, and then J iterates through the articles, but it goes through the articles for each city, right, because it's inside of it. So it goes to city I each time, and then to the articles for that city. And it's going until, while J is less than the length of the articles, which is how many articles there are, and J is incrementing. So if you want to refer to the first article for that, for the first city, it would be cities 0.articles 0. And then if you wanted the link for that article, .link. If you wanted the title, .title. So that would be for the first one. For the second article of the first city, it would be cities 0.articles 1. .link, .title, whatever you wanted. So either .link or .title. Okay, so inside the for loop, inside these nested for loops, you're going to be going through each city and then each article for each city. So for example, probably if you wanted to get the city name or the city's zip code, let's say, it would be something like cities I dot zip code. Okay, so that's how you're parsing this JSON that you're getting.
which is what the RSS feed is returning to you. Okay. So once you've gotten the response from proxy.php, I know this is all foreign, by the way. Some of you are looking at me like, what do you mean I've gotten the response? I have not done no such thing. But you will go through it much slower than I'm going through it now. So this is a big overview of every part of the problem set, but you're going to go very slowly through each part and do this stuff. And you will eventually get this response, and it will be nice JSON, and you will be able to create your news bubble. So a function that has already been written for you, relief, is addMarker, and it's going to take a point and XHTML, and the point is going to be where to put this marker, and the XHTML is going to be what's inside this marker. So because it's XHTML, this is really cool. You can put anything you want inside the marker. You can put pictures, you can put anything that you can put on a web page, basically, inside this little bubble that comes up when you click on a marker. So this gives you a lot of freedom, but you're going to be specifically putting in, here's what I was talking about before. So once you're inside the cities loop, you can refer to citieseye.latitude to get the latitude and put that in there, right? And this is XHTML, so you can put whatever you want in here, as you can see here. First let's discuss how to find the point where you want to put the marker. So notice that addMarker takes a point, right? It doesn't take the latitude and the longitude. It takes this very specific thing that's part of the Google Maps API called a point. So it's not taking, you can't just pass it a latitude and longitude. You have to pass it a point. Well, how do you create a point? Well, you do this. You run new glatlong, and then in parentheses, this is a function, so in parentheses as the arguments to that function, you'll pass it the latitude and the longitude of your city. Okay, so when we're inside that city's for loop we started earlier, citieseye.latitude, citieseye.longitude will be passed to new glatlong. And that new glatlong will return a point, right, that you're going to store in some variable, presumably called point. That's going to take into account the latitude and longitude and create this point that Google Maps understands. And then you can call addMarker with that point as the first argument. And it'll put the marker on that point. The second argument will be the XHTML, which is what you want to be put inside of that info bubble that pops up when you click on the marker. So this is an example of that. So you can put var XHTML equals, let's say I want to put it in bold, this is CS50. And then if I want to put another line, then I do XHTML plus equals, as if this was a counter of some sort. And that's going to add this line to follow the line we just wrote. So this is like when you wrote your homepage at index.html for problem set 7, you put all sorts of HTML inside there that you wanted to appear on your website. Now you can put all sorts of HTML that can appear inside here. So you can put, this is CS50, you can put a line break or two in this case, but then you also want to put in your link, so the links to the articles. So the way you put in a link is the same exact way that you would create a link on your homepage, a link to CS50's website that David did in PSET 7 or in lecture week 8, I think, for this kind of stuff, for putting these links to various websites. So this is the tag A with href equal to the actual website that you're going to, and then you put whatever text you want to show up. So in this case, you might have the actual website you want to go to, a link to the article. So how do we get that link to the article? Well, right here, citieseye.articles.link. And you can concatenate this inside of your A tag for a link. You can concatenate it using the plus sign for concatenation. So you can concatenate this variable with strings in order to create this link. Yeah.
So you take the marker just gets the specific point on the map, and then you have like a pop-up bubble which will have links to these articles on that point from that point.
Okay, so the question was, I just have to repeat it for the camera. The question was, you are getting a marker which is on the point on the map, and then when you click the marker, there's an info window.
Yeah.
and it has the XHTML in it? Yes. The answer is yes. So all you have to do is call the one function addMarker, and that'll deal with creating the marker and the info window. Right, so even though the function isn't called addMarker and info window, it'll take the point, put a marker on it, and then take the XHTML and put it in the info window that opens when the marker is clicked. And so inside that info window, you'll have the links to all your articles. And you can have each link, so the actual link part of your A tag will be the first thing we have here, so cities.articlesj.link. And then you can put what the text is as the title of the article. Right? So go back to how you create a link, and remember that if you wanted to create a link to CS50, you would first have http://www.cs50.net as the first part of your A tag, but then after closing the open tag, you would have something like, this is CS50, for example, and then close the tag. And then it'll say this is CS50, but it'll be a link to CS50's website. So in a similar way, you can make inside your info window, you can make it say the title of the article, but when you click it, it will actually go to the link where that article is found. So let's just go over again, because I know it's kind of hard, that all these things, so you sending the response, you do once. So you send the sending the request, sorry. You send the request to proxy.php once for every time update is called, right? So inside the update function, you send to the proxy once, and that'll return information about every city and every article for each city. So then you want to enter the while loop that deals with each city. Sorry, the for loop. The for loop that deals with each city. So inside of that for loop, you're doing multiple things. So inside of that for loop, you are creating, so this var cities only happens once as well, right? So that's receiving the request and storing everything you were just given in cities, but then the for loop enters and goes through each city. And for each city, you want to find its latitude and longitude so that you can create this point variable, and you want to generate its XHTML. So basically for each city within these for loops, so before the second for loop, before the inner one, so just inside the outer one, you find the latitude and longitude of cities I. Okay, so that's with this, cities I dot latitude, cities I dot longitude. Then you call new glat long to find the latitude and longitude of that city, and then you generate the XHTML for it. And later, you'll call addMarker at the end of the for loop. You'll call addMarker, and it'll have point and XHTML, if those are the names of your two variables, which in my case, they are. And for generating the XHTML, part of it can be outside of this inner for loop, so just in the outer for loop, if you want the XHTML to include the name of the city and its... let's say it's zip code. But then part of it will have to happen inside the inner for loop because you need to go through each article for each city. So for the XHTML, you'll originally create it, and you can add as much to you as you want to it by calling XHTML plus equals and then adding another string. Okay, so that's how you can add the link and the title, or really the link that appears as a title for each article. Okay, and then you create the marker, and then you're done. Any questions, concerns, comments? Last problem set. Are you excited?
Yes.
Here, I'll shoot, while you're thinking of questions, I'll shoot these at, and whoever catches them can have them. I'm scared to hit someone. Well, you can pick it up as you leave if anyone wants one. I think they're fun. My roommates think they're fun, too. That's why I only have three.
So would you recommend doing this problem set?
Would I recommend doing this problem set? Yes, I really would. I really would. If you had asked me this before I read through this year's version of it, I would have said no. I would have said, if you have a problem set to drop, drop it. Save yourself some sanity. But that's sort of also a fib, because I really hated doing it last year, but really loved finishing it. So, you know, which is the case for a lot of problem sets. You really love when you're done and it's functioning, everything. And I actually got to use this problem set for something, as I said, I think before you came. You know, this is the kind of thing that you might actually use at some point. Or you might not use this specific thing because, you know, you might not, you know, need to have the news for every city in America in this format. Just a chance, but you might still use the fact that you know how to manipulate Google Maps to make your own thing. And maybe a student group that you're part of will want to do something that lends itself really well to Google Maps, and you'll be able to use stuff like this. It's also great. XML and RSS feeds are really good to use because those are used everywhere. So, you know, on all sorts of websites, you'll have an RSS feed to news results relating to that website, whatever it is. It might also be useful come final project time to have RSS feeds on your website. So there are a lot of different uses for it. What I would recommend, honestly, and this is probably something I shouldn't say, so that's how you know it's honest, is that if you have not yet dropped a problem set, you should try this one. So you should work your hardest on it and try to make it work because it really is worthwhile. But, you know, if it's causing you too much of a headache, you know, don't worry about it. It'll be your lowest grade. But you should try it. You should submit it. You should push yourself to do it because it is a really cool problem set. And it's one of, again, one of those that you actually lives on the web and that you can actually share with people. So, especially if you enjoyed PSET 7, even if you thought it was hard, but if you enjoyed the idea of having a website to work with, then this is even cooler. Any other questions? Yeah.
I thought I did what the PSET requires, but it's still telling me like I'm forbidden when I try to visit the site.
Okay, so the question is about permissions. So if you look at the problem set spec, you have it tells you exactly how to chmod each of your files. So did you chmod your PSET 8 directory as a whole?
And that happened to me, so I had to.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that'll be a common question, so it's actually a good thing we're handling it right now. The problem set spec tells you to chmod everything except for your PSET 8 directory. But unless you chmod your PSET 8 directory as a whole, nothing inside of that directory, no matter what you've chmodded it, will be accessible. So make sure you chmod be outside of PSET 8, right? So be inside public HTML and chmod 7.11 PSET 8. No problem. Yes, and then inside of PSET 8, you chmod all of these. Any other questions? Okay, cool. I know it'll be a race to those rockets, so. And if you want lollipops, they're still here, so come get those. And good luck, and thank you, everyone, for watching these walkthroughs. I hope they've been helpful. I guess this is my last one. It's a little sad, but I hope I've been helpful. And thank you all for watching them. Good luck. Aw, you guys. That's really cute. Thanks.